Welcome to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
Hello, listeners. You're here for part three of Maria Dyer Taylor, the wife, first wife of Hudson Taylor, who started the China Inland Mission Missionary Society. And, you know, Mary, you've heard of CIM. I mean, you're a writer. And one of the things that I think all of us who have been missionaries and been on the field, one of the people we admire most is Hudson Taylor.
Absolutely.
He's so inspirational.
Absolutely. And I love hearing, in episode one and episode two of this particular podcast, we were talking about Maria and her story and also Hudson's story. And they've gone through so much suffering and trials, so many obstacles. Both of them have a heart to serve the Lord. Maria was actually born in China. We talked about that during the first episode on Maria. And then in this last episode, they got married, and Hudson and Maria have gone back to London to kind of raise some support for this dream of what would become the China Inland Mission, which the idea being, let's go further into China. And let's not make being a missionary such a classist thing where there's so many different things are required as far as education, et cetera. But what's so cool about what we've been learning is we're starting to see, or what I'm picking up on is we're starting to see all these things happening that are really forcing Maria and Hudson to return to prayer. Mm-hmm. They've been through so many trials, so many difficulties. We're seeing not only prayer, but also how they're thinking about the China Inland Mission and the obstacles that really shaped what would become the tenets of the organization. So very, very interesting. And I'm very excited to hear the rest of the story.
You know, it's so interesting because the fruit of the China Inland Mission, even though they had to leave when the communists took over China, the underground church in China still traces their roots to the work that Hudson Taylor did in the China Inland Mission. And it was, you know, so profound.
Yes.
But what we're going to see as we go into the next episode and our final episode is all the warfare.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that Hudson Taylor later realized is that you cannot assault the kingdom of darkness without some retaliation.
Mm.
And how he had to see it as spiritual warfare because they were stripping the enemy of his weapons and of his people and of his hold of China.
Mm.
And so what we're going to see, not only did we see spiritual warfare when they wanted to get married, spiritual warfare when they were on the ship coming down to China, and spiritual warfare when you've got this one couple, the Nichols, who were upsetting and bringing division in the new recruits. And so this is going to get intensified.
Mm-hmm. Well, the psalmist said, right, many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivers him out of them all.
That's exactly what we're going to see. In 1867, little Gracie, who, as I mentioned before, was the apple of Hudson Taylor's eye, died at 8 years old of water on the brain.
Oh.
So Hudson returned too late from, you know, going in and scoping out the interior and evangelizing to help her. And he was trying to, by the time he realized what was going on, it was too late to save her.
How sad.
Maria was heartbroken. Gracie was not only a daughter, but it was her companion and best friend. Gracie was just amazing, very vivacious like her mother, and they were very close. Maria wrote a poem about the loss. In fact, Maria wrote many poems, and often poured her heart and feelings out to God in her poetry.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the Nichols began to stir up more discontent and blamed Hudson Taylor for everything that went wrong. It's Hudson Taylor's fault. They refused to wear the Chinese attire. And in their Western wear, they highly offended the Mandarin and the Chinese people, and they turned against them, and they were driven out of the village that they were at, and they said, this is all Hudson Taylor's fault. He didn't prepare us enough. You know, look what he's done to us. So everything was Hudson Taylor's fault. Mm-hmm. And they blamed everything. And again, they would go to the other recruits and say, you know, you just wait. You just wait. You know, this is what's going to happen. So Hudson tried to talk to them, tried to reason with them, tried to pray with them, but it only got worse. So 48 hours before Maria gave birth, Hudson and Maria both met with the Nichols to try to resolve the conflict. The Nichols left even angrier and went straight to the Reverend George Evans Mole. So Mole was the new bishop who had taken Russell's place. Maybe you remember Russell. He was the one that violently opposed the marriage of Hudson to Maria. And he was poisoned. He poisoned the mind of Reverend George Evans Mole. So he already had a prejudice against Hudson Taylor. And now he's getting these recruits. And the Nichols said things like, oh, he forces everyone to be baptized into his own denomination. And he kisses all the women recruits. And what he had done is there was one recruit who was living with them whose name was Betchley. And when he gave his children a kiss on the forehead of Maria, he would give her a kiss too, because, you know, she was helping them and taking care of the children. So they took that as a little too affectionate and that he was out of order. So Maria would write about this time saying, as to the harsh judgings of the world or the more painful misunderstandings of the Christian brethren, I feel that the best plan is to go forward on our work and leave God to vindicate our cause. Mm. And then she said this, we have come to fight Satan and he will not let us alone. Mm. So what an incredible
Amen.
Insight. In 1867, Bishop Mole returned to London and began to denounce the CIM and Hudson Taylor. Well, Hudson and Maria moved further into the interior, hoping to set up a base in a place called Yangchow. They arrived in 1868 with their four children, a nurse, a female recruit, Emily Blatchley, who we already mentioned before, and six Chinese evangelists. Until the move, Hudson and Maria and their party had been living on boats for over 2 months while Hudson tried to find a place for them to live. He applied and tried to get 24 other different locations, but the people considered them foreign devils, and they refused to rent to them.
Because they're going further inland now. So this is
Yangchow
the place
where... Yangchow is in the interior. They have penetrated into the interior.
Mm-hmm. And they're not familiar with missionaries in the area or
nope.
maybe even
nope.
Westerners as well.
Exactly.
That would be
exactly. And they've been told all sorts of things about Westerners too. So they found an inn that they could rent after unsuccessfully trying to secure the other ones. Maria went to Shanghai for medicine for Maria, her littlest baby, who was born 48 hours after her conflict
mm-hmm.
with
the Nichols.
With the
yes.
Nichols, right. The baby had whooping cough and needed medication. She also went down there to meet a new recruit. When she was down there, though, she received news that Hudson was deathly ill. She quickly hired a boat and made her way back to him. And that was the type of love that they had. She was always there to take care of him. In the meantime, some of the people in Yangchow began to spread vicious rumors about the foreigners and wrote bills, or what we would call tracts, claiming the foreigners were stealing children and other such accusations. The mission was attacked on numerous occasions. On the final attack, Maria, pregnant again, had to jump out a window, and she landed on her side. She jumped like 12 to 15 feet.
Oh, my goodness.
She had some really bad injuries from this.
This would send most people home.
Mm-hmm. Maria was more concerned about the others in their party mm-hmm. and set about tending to her children and the women. There was a woman named Mrs. Rutland who was pregnant also, and Maria cared more about what was going on with Mrs. Rutland than her own estate. Mm. She kept working. She was in terrible pain. In fact, she ached for weeks after that fall. The English military came to their rescue at last, and this was like a week or 2 weeks after the incident. Hudson had not wanted to involve the English. He wanted to just leave and just to wait and just keep going in and sharing the gospel. And he wanted the Chinese to see, we don't retaliate. We don't shoot. Look how kind we are. In fact, he even wrote a pamphlet in Chinese and put it all over where the other tracts had been in China. The military that complicated everything and almost ruined the witness of CIM and almost ruined Chinese Inland Mission altogether. Back in England, the Liberal Party had taken power in Parliament. And so Disraeli had been dismissed. He actually resigned and Gladstone had taken his place. And so the government had become very liberal and they really resented missionaries. And they felt like, why don't you just leave those people alone? If you hadn't gone into the interior, if you had left them alone, we wouldn't have any problems. You're going to ruin our trade with China. You're going to ruin all our negotiations. We won't be able to make the money. We won't be able to have the China that we get from China. And so they were so concerned about the money that they turned on Hudson Taylor. In fact, they were even considering a bill in the parliament to remove all missionaries from the interior of China.
Oh, my.
So, I mean, you've got spiritual opposition, you've got political opposition, you've got opposition in their own ranks with the Nichols. And it's only going to get worse because the media picks up on this, the newspapers in England, and they begin to write scathing articles about Hudson Taylor. Moole was feeding them information. By this time, Mr. and Mrs. Nichol, who Hudson had asked to leave the mission field, were back. And they were spreading vicious rumors about Hudson Taylor, and they were calling him the dictator. And so Berger, who ran the office for China Inland Mission, was receiving 20 to 30 letters a day asking what was going on, some even denouncing Hudson Taylor.
Oh, my.
And he didn't know how to answer them or what to do. In the meantime, George Mueller, remember how he had supported Hudson Taylor?
Yes.
He read all of the articles in all the newspapers and he knew they weren't true. You know, a godly man will recognize a lie. Mm-hmm. And that's what he did. And so he set himself to pray for Hudson Taylor, to pray for China Inland Mission, and to set aside money for their support. And the money that he set aside and sent to them during this hard, hard time was equal, if not even more, than the support that they had lost through the scandal and the slander.
Wow.
So the week after the riot, Maria was unable to walk without help. Someone asked her if she would like to see the people punished. Punishment? I really have not considered the question, as it has nothing to do with me. The revenge I desire is the wider opening up of the country to our work. Hmm. On November 28, 1968, Charles Taylor was born, who they called Charlie. In 1869, Maria stood before Hudson. I'm sorry, in 1869, Maria stood between Hudson and suicide. The depression came back and he was suicidal. Have I ruined it? The condemnation. You know, I shouldn't have baptized those two women. I shouldn't have given a goodnight kiss. He could think of everything he did wrong. I should have screened the recruits so there wouldn't have been the Nichols. I should have trained the people more. He could think of everything he did wrong. And during this time, he felt a profound emptiness in his soul, and he began to cry out to God. You know, and he said, God, I've done all this for you. How come I can't feel you? How come, you know, I don't have any unction? Why is all this happening? He poured out his heart to a man named John McCarthy, who felt the same inclination, not about the condemnation, but he wanted to be closer to the Lord. He felt like as a missionary, he was running on empty, and he said, Lord, I can't minister like this. And after their conversation ended, McCarthy went to prayer, and he wrote to Hudson what he felt was a breakthrough. He said this, abiding, not striving or struggling. Mm. The letter struck Hudson, especially the last paragraph where McCarthy wrote, not a striving to have faith or to increase our faith, but a looking at the faithful one seems all we need. Mm. A resting in the loved one entirely for a time, for eternity. It does not appear to me to be anything new, only formerly misunderstood. Mm. It was then that Hudson learned the secret of resting in Jesus and abiding. It changed his countenance. It changed his mannerism. It changed his way of doing things. Maria was the first to notice the change in Hudson. But she had already discovered that secret years ago when she was 17 years old and a single woman going to China. In 1870, Maria and Hudson sent their children, Bertie, Freddie, and Maria, to England. They were going to send little Samuel, but he was so grief-stricken at the idea of leaving his parents that he actually died en route to Shanghai before they could, before he could get on the ship.
Oh, no.
Emily Bletchley agreed to take all the children, this is so precious, back to England and to raise them as her own.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Isn't that precious? He died on the Yangtze River, little Samuel, on his way to Shanghai. 6 weeks later, Maria and Hudson wept as they watched their children sail away from Shanghai.
Oh.
In June of 1870, it was especially hard on Maria. The heat was unbearable. She was pregnant again and struggling with breathing. She took cool baths every night to deal with the heat. And Maria refused, though, to lessen her workload. Even though she was sick and not feeling well and she was pregnant, she kept teaching classes. She did literary projects and kept up her correspondence. Outwardly, she seemed happy and talked about visiting her children in England. However, after a bath on July 5th, Maria was so exhausted that she laid down on her bed uncovered and fell sound asleep. The temperature suddenly dropped and Maria caught a bad chill. The next thing was that cholera set in and overtook her. She said that the pain of cholera was more excruciating than childbirth. Maria weakened as she was in constant pain and she could not hold down food. Maria felt that her labor was soon and begged Hudson, "Please don't stay long away from me, love, for I possibly need you tonight." Mm. Maria gave birth to a healthy boy. They named him Noel. However, she was unable to nurse him because she was so sick. They fed him a bottle for a week, but he delivered thrush. Hudson searched in vain for a wet nurse, but the Chinese women were too suspicious of Hudson and the obligation. Finally, he found a woman who was willing to nurse the baby, but by the time he brought her back, it was too late.
Mm-hmm.
Little Noel had died at 13 days old. They said he was, of all Hudson Taylor's children, he was the most beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Hudson heard Maria call him from the other room. He rushed in. Her hair was long and matted. He asked her if he could cut it. And then he asked her if she would like him to send a block of her hair to her three children. "Yes, and tell them to be sure to be kind to dear Miss Bletchley and to love Jesus." She felt her head. That's what you call thinning out, when she felt, you know, her hair was gone. "Well, I shall have all the comfort and you have all the responsibility as to my looks. I never do care what anyone else thinks as to my appearance. You know, my darling, I am altogether yours."
Mm.
With that, she put her thin arms around him and pulled him close and kissed him. At midnight, Hudson gave her some medicine and applied wet towels to her brow. He refused to leave her side. "My darling, are you conscious that you are dying?" he asked. "Dying? Do you think so? What makes you think so?" she asked. "I can see it, darling." "What is making me die?" "Your strength is giving way." "Can it be? I feel no pain, only weariness." "Yes, you are going home. You will soon be with Jesus." "Oh, I am sorry, Hudson." "You're not sorry to go be with Jesus, Maria." "Oh, no, it's not that, you know. Darling, it's that for 10 years past, there has not been a cloud between me and my Savior. I cannot be sorry to go to Him. But it does grieve me to leave you alone at such a time. Yet, He will be with you and meet all your need." So she's dying and she's worried about Hudson.
That's beautiful.
Not about herself. "I'm going to go be with Jesus, but Hudson, you." Her voice had dropped to a whisper. And she kissed Hudson. She remembered that Freddie, her son in England, did not have a Bible and asked Hudson to get him one as her last present to him. Then they brought little Charlie to her.
Mm.
and she kissed him. Hudson asked her if she had any pain, and she replied that she didn't. She slipped into a coma about 7:30 that morning, the next morning. Then a short spasm at 7:45, and she lay still, breathing gently. Then her breath sank lower. Hudson knelt beside her and committed her to the Lord, thanking the Lord for the 12 years they had had together. He thanked the Lord for taking her into his presence, and there and then he rededicated his life to Jesus and to the service of the Lord Jesus. Remember, he's going through so much at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Her breathing stopped at 9:20 that morning. When Maria's life passed, Hudson went to another room to be alone with God. He spoke of his son, Noel, and his beloved Maria. My heart wells up with joy and gratitude for their unutterable bliss, though my heart is also nigh to breaking. Our Jesus has done all things well.
Wow.
That is the story of Maria. She was only 33 years old when she went to heaven.
Wow.
But what a legacy that she left. In fact, the book that I read by John Pollock, it was the story of Hudson and Maria Taylor. Because without Maria, there would not be any Christian Inland Mission. There would not have been, Hudson would never have risen to the leadership role or to the pioneer that he became, or to the spirituality that he came to possess.
Mm-hmm.
But it was Maria's influence and her love. They were truly, truly soulmates.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just love the way that she continually served others.
Yeah, it's such a beautiful story. I still can't kind of get past all these trials and tribulations and definitely spiritual warfare. And yet the way that the Lord was allowing those things to not only minister to them, to teach them, to grow them. I mean, it really made them who they were, even the holding on to each other. And I think the depth of love, you know, she'd lost her parents when she was young. And to, I imagine, to find your person when you've come from that type of beginning, it's, you know, what a gift.
You know, she wrote in one of her journals that being an orphan and having lost her father, she looked at God as her loving father, as the father that she'd always wanted. That, and so she had this fatherly relationship and affection for God that really, really was deep. And because of that fatherly affection towards God, it caused her not to put expectations on others. Like, she never said, you know, Hudson, you should do this or you shouldn't do that. She just accepted him as he was and kind of like lovingly kind of channeled his energies and these things into, you know, better grammar and mm-hmm. better writing skills. And again, these things that we talk about, like you said earlier, the hardships that we see them endure, they also help them to understand and what they needed to do with China Inland Mission. Like, he understood that the headquarters had to be in China, you know, boots on the ground.
Yes.
And they understood that they had to prepare the missionaries and the recruits more for induction, and they had to screen them better and to see if they would be ready for a life in China. Interestingly enough, Gladys Elwood, who we also did an episode on, applied for the China Inland Mission but was refused. And she ended up going on her own and had a really, really incredible, successful ministry in China. But it was interesting because their screening process got pretty intense.
Pretty intense. You know? Well, and understandably so after all they'd been through. I'm also reminded of, you know, 2 Corinthians. It says, like, we don't lose heart because our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. And so we don't look on what's seen, but what's unseen.
Exactly. And he realized in The Secret of Abiding that there was nothing he could do but to give it to God. And when you give it to God, you've done the greatest thing. And Maria had already learned that secret of giving everything to the Lord at 17. And that's why Maria is a woman worth knowing.
Thank you for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not-so-well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.